Hello and welcome to the Built Academy podcast. I'm your host, Carl Storms. As you may have noticed, we are releasing this episode a bit early as we have an additional seasonal special in the works for you, where we'll see all the Built Academy team return to air a surprise interview by the end of this month. Before we kick off this episode, we have a short address from our producer.
Hello, Built Academy podcast friends and esteemed listeners. I am Sylvia Taurer, Region Manager in Europe for the Digital Built Environment Institute and team leader of Built Academy. Usually, I'm always in the background at the producing end to the podcasts, but since the Built Academy initiative is part of the larger Digital Built Environment Institute, I would like to address you directly for those of you not familiar yet with us. The Digital Built Environment Institute, in short, DBEI, is a global not-for-profit servicing the AECO industry. All of our regional committees, including our podcast students, are dedicated volunteers and, together with our members, are committed to leading positive change to the global climate by improving productivity, efficiency, and sustainability for the built environment. We are a universal voice, not constrained by discipline, software platform, geography, or politics. By working and acting together, we aim to make a positive and lasting impact on the planet. DBEI Community is one of our most recent initiatives, bringing together supportive, engaged, and passionate experts to share their big ideas and help you increase your efficiency and productivity. The DBEI Community online platform gives you the ability to learn and grow with access to the resource hub, forums, online events, and more. Some of you may already know that we annually run our global educational event series, Built or Built Academy Summit. Built stands for Building, Infrastructure, Lifecycle, and Technology. The impact of COVID-19 has put that all on hold. But the organizational aspects of running all our educational initiatives requires funding. Your continuing participation and contribution through paid membership of DBEI will help us to sustain our organization in these challenging times so that we can keep putting on great educational content for you and our industry. Do join us and become part of a global network and visit www.dbei.org. I look forward to meeting you there.
I've been attending and taking part in DBEI events since before it was the DEBI. It is such a great organization and an amazing community. It's certainly well worth our support. Now, as they say, on with the show. So welcome to the podcast, Daniel.
Hello.
Hello to you, Daniel. So what do you have in store for us this episode?
Hello, Carl. It's nice to be back on stage with you tonight. Well, my episode will dive deep into the geometry learning tonight. As artificial intelligence becomes more and more relevant as an early in design phase, we will explore in this episode how artificial intelligence not only currently is researched, but how it is already in use and how the building industry also benefits from this progress. I had the great pleasure of teaming up with two passionate and brilliant building industry experts and researchers, which already created large impacts on the research and practical approach.
So the first guest today is Alberto Torno. Alberto is the president of the Computational Design Institute. He is currently exploring ways in which the convergence between digital and humanities can facilitate cross-pollination between different industries within an ethical framework. He served as the research and computational design leader in architecture and engineering organizations, receiving his O1 visa for outstanding abilities with HOK and HDR. Tono obtained his master's in building engineering architecture from the University of Padua and in Harbin Institute of Technology. He has been working in the computational design and deep learning space since 2014. Furthermore, he is focused on the improvement of the building information modeling and virtual design and construction, BIM VDC workflows, with a statistical approach to reduce the impact of these processes have on our planet. Hence, Tono is a LEED AP certified, and he is completing a MicroMasters program in statistics and data science from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology X. He is an international multi-award winning hacker, and a speaker, and his work with an architectural and artificial intelligence brought him to the companies in China and Netherlands, Italy, and California.
Next up is Alessio Granzini. Alessio is a prototype engineer for immersive realities. He's interested in how augmented reality and virtual reality meet private and public spaces, infrastructuring the interfaces of the future. His research starts from the gaming industry. After working on a virtual reality game named VR Reef Rescue, educational multiplayer experienced by Super 78 Studios, he produces a number of freelance projects for the AC industry and entertainment industry. Working at Morphosis Architects as a Unity developer, his work at Milan Design Week 2019 features a multiplayer augmented reality app experience that plays on the potential that the fields of design has to offer when it comes to AR. He taught Unity workshops internationally, as the one in Shanghai, Urban Mixed Reality Environment, for Digital Futures 2019, and published multiple articles about AR, VR, on platforms such as Design Boom, Art Daily, and Form. Let's have a listen. Well, hello. I would like to invite Alessio and Alberto on stage with me tonight. We are discussing AI, as already introduced by Carl. And to start up with, I would like to try to give us all a short of an introduction about terms and clarify them. We all have been touched by AI in recent years, and especially last night, I went on Simpsons and watched one of the new episodes, and then just realized that even the new episode is focusing quite a lot on AI. So the artificial intelligence is influencing us more and more in all of our daily lives. This development also is impacting and has impacted us and the construction industry quite heavily in the last years. A wide range of terms have been used with this topic, and quite some people tend to mix them up. With you experts, I would like to ask briefly to outline all of the relevant terms for this episode and set up, let's say, a general framework of the terminology and set a foundation for AI for our listeners.
Thank you so much, Daniel, for the kind question. I think it's really relevant to underline the main terminology regarding to AI. And yeah, thank you so much for having us as a guest. So I would like to start giving a quick introduction about the main terminology that is used in the AI field, and especially the subdivision of the AI. I'm going to be pretty brief in this. First of all, AI can be classified mainly as statistics in a certain way, in a broader spectrum. And then we can go deeper in level like machine learning, deep learning, and what probably is going to be the topic of today's conversation is geometric deep learning. Of course, there are other like reinforcement learning and other terminology that are more applicable to robotics, and robotic construction is another big field, probably can touch also today. And there are a lot of other terminology really connected to the field that we can just really briefly cite. Of course, there are also a lot of application that can be applied, and a lot of terminology regarding the study that someone should have, the background that you should have, like algebra, linear algebra, calculus. You should know the basic of tensor, matrix, eigenvector, eigenvalues, and so on and so forth. Basic of probability, basic of elementary math, and so on. We can also think about the main subdivision of all different way we can perform the learning in machine learning, deep learning, and so on, based on unsupervised, supervised, self-supervised, and so many others that you can dive into by yourself as well. But nowadays, specifically for architects, for people who are joining this AI revolution, I want really to stress the fact that from 2016, from a really amazing paper developed by Jan LeCun, Michael Bronstein, John Bruna, all these professors from NYU and other really great university, they basically quote the term of geometric deep learning. So they are starting doing a lot of research regarding to meshes, point clouds, voxels, and graphs. All these entities are really important for us as architects, since we can imagine a facade as a compositional mesh, also an internal environment, indoor environment, like the point cloud, of course, the scanning, and so many other representations. So these simple representation of the 3D environment in which we live are extremely important. And nowadays, another term that probably is going to be extremely used are a way to represent a 3D environment with implicit function. And one of the most used nowadays is sine distance function. So it basically is a way to represent a shape with the isosurface. So when something, when some points are on the surface of the object from a camera, basically, it represents as a zero. And when it lay inside the shape or outside the shape, as respectively with minus one and plus one value. So in this way, you can represent everything as a continuous function. And that's a way to represent an implicit function. Because, yeah, when we try to do deep learning in an end-to-end way, the function should be differentiable in every point. So it should be continuous in a certain way. And so we can apply derivative, we can apply all the amazing math operation, especially it's all about optimization as well in this field. So working with manifolds is another important property and application to have. So I hope this helped a little bit to find the main terminology. And I don't want to miss the really hot topic nowadays, that privacy ethics in AI, especially what happened last week. They fired one of the main leader, Google, of AI and ethics for this kind of reason. So there is a community, I'm not doing any advertisement, but I think he went from a really great university from Oxford. He started this open-minded community. They are really working hard to provide federated and distributed learning with differentiable privacy. And that's going to really help us as AEC to not only share data easily, but be able to share also models, like statistical models, AI models, and that can really benefit our field. So privacy ethics are two important considerations to look into. And of course, we can dive into more of the terminology like GAN, generative adversarial network, and different application architecture, like PointNet, dataset of ShapeNet, ImageNet, and so on.
Well, Alberto, thank you so much for this introduction, and we will definitely touch some other terms throughout the interview. But for now, I would like to leave it like it is, and thank you for the terminology itself, and jump on to today's industry, which we are currently talking about. Especially, would like to ask you about some applications of artificial intelligence in today's industry, especially, general, well-known terms.
I can start with the main application that we can see in our field as architecture. And we can divide it like in three main parts, so the way sectors. And of course, we are always talking about AEC as architecture, engineering, construction. And I see this in twofold, like the initial part of the concept design. That is one of the main reasons most of us entering the architecture field is the creativity. And that can go really broad in many different fields. So I'm seeing in the industry moving a lot, especially manufacture, shoes design, car design, not only building. So especially with Alexis, you can testify later, also gaming is a big topic and it's really important creativity. And is almost $300 billion industry based on the projector. So it's a pretty good industry to be in. And then the last part, of course, is the construction. You need to make sure the building or your idea, part of the creativity, are going to be realizable. And so the robotics part play a really big role on that, especially for AI. So based on this twofold composition, we can see a lot of AI application in the first part of creativity. We have seen generative adversarial network apply, especially with images, deep dream, and so many other. I would suggest a lot of the new work has been done in 3D content creation. So the way, also from a picture, you can basically scan it, take a picture of an object, and directly have the 3D model and perform some operation, like with, again, GAN. There is a really good project of 3D GAN or ShapeGAN. basically testify the fact that you can work with the latent space, the main space where all the shapes are embedded, and then you can navigate and see all the different interpolation between those and also generate new shapes not seen before in distribution. So that's pretty interesting field, and there are a lot of company, really big company, of course, because this require also a lot of computation most of the time, that are working on this. On the other part is the constructability, and I can suggest some of the work done by many big company and university, especially here in the Silicon Valley, regarding the robotic construction. And also you can see this dog, of course, Spot, working in the building site. Nowadays get really interesting to see how they can navigate in the building site, but also how they can operate. So shape and part assembly is another main topic, how a robot can assemble, take consideration of the physics. So there are so many other software like Bullets that can simulate physics and different environment like iGypsum, Replica from Facebook, and so many others that can be really interesting. I had the honor to be on a specific facility here, San Francisco. They were developing a lot of projects in manufacturing that are coming soon, also for the construction of facade, the assembly of facades, and many applications in manufacture as well. And the main topic, and I think this can pass the ball to Alessio as well, is the application with VR and AR. So I think AI definitely is helping a lot in achieving those tasks and simplify a lot of the pipeline there, especially on the recognition and scanning environment. Nowadays, it's taking a lot of time initially of the experience to calibrate the environment, scanning the environment. And with the new application, for example, from picture to 3D, that become really easily to translate in just one shot the reality from a picture to a 3D environment, a 3D model. And Mesh RCNN is a great example of that for some shapes initially. And you can see other like occupancy, C network, convolution occupancy network, NERF, NER, that is also implicit function, and so many others.
Well, Alberto, I agree totally on using all of the potential of the AC industry to bring all of these dreams, personal ideas into unique projects and something which is used in a later stage by everybody in our daily lives. Speaking about generative design, which is one of the most interpret ways of defining geometry in a quite sophisticated way, I would last to ask you how your experiences with this technology is, and I would also ask you to describe the practical advantages and disadvantages of this methodology.
Yeah, now exactly. This topic of generative design is also one of the hot topics nowadays regarding the application of AI. And we've seen, also Alessio mentioned, with the Spacemaker AI, the acquisition to another big company, it's been acquired by another big company. We can see how the startups, and just a comparison about the dollar, we can see the different acquisition between Spacemaker AI that is doing something extremely important for climate change, constructability, and something else that is a communication platform like Slack. And there is a really big difference of acquisition in terms of money. And those are really important consideration regarding what we're trying to achieve. So generative design, there are so many conversation, so many ideas around that. And one of the things I want to keep in mind is we always need to evaluate the pros and cons and the level of sophistication of the technology nowadays. One great topic, and I think the AI now is really helping us as architect engineer, is the interdisciplinary field. So they work together from NLP, natural language processing, from computer vision community, now from with the computer graphic community. And we see how they disrupt so many different industries like DeepMind, not only disrupt chess, Go, and now also with AlphaFold, disrupting also biology and protein folding, and solving one of the main important problems that before was even unthinkable. Just to mention AlphaFold 2, just released recently, has an estimation of 10 to the 300 power So compared before, we know that the atom in the entire universe are 10 to the 128. So we see such a so large magnitude that was probably unthinkable before. And if we think about architecture, we probably have the same number of options, you know, for the way that are really a lot. And at the same time, we need that computational power. We need the cloud computing. But here we're talking about almost 200 GPUs, which not a lot of office, architectural office can have, of course. And definitely it's different to compare something that can really solve all the disease in the world, be able to assemble, understand how the protein folds compared to a building. But definitely we can try to work together as a community, and folding at home today, especially with this amazing year we had in the past, we see a lot of innovation from the field of medicine. And Folding at Home is a project that testifies the use of community. We can share all the GPU and we can do a great job in that and creating the biggest and largest supercomputers in a certain way. So those are the field of are really important to take in consideration when we talk about generative design, what we can do with that, so, and how much power we need and what we need to do in terms of that. The way I see generative design is more related to an application of GAN, and that's probably is a good field to be in the future for 3D shapes.
Alessia, you are also working with computational power in your daily work, trying to use as much as the geometrical advances in your way of working with artificial intelligence to bring your own dreams into reality or into a virtual reality. So saying, do you want to tell us about experiences in your practice? And I would also like to ask you how you work with this general medium.
Sure. So first of all, thank you for the opportunity for chatting with you guys. I think all that Alberto said, it's very compelling and really frames a little bit the discussion. As you mentioned in the question, I work a little bit more into detail, being like a sort of a developer in an architecture firm. So definitely I work on a smaller scale, where we really have like a precise goal to accomplish. For example, in my case, it's often the visualization of projects for clients and or performance of buildings, for example, certain part of the buildings, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the topic of AI, it's actually included in all of this technology, even if we don't see it, is actually there. For example, when it comes to geometry optimization, I can say that a big problem when you are working with big loads of geometry is the fact that when you're trying to visualize them in real time, and real time is a concept that really goes along with data collection and all of this, just like more larger discourse where we are trying to collecting and using data on a very small percentage of time. We are trying to continuously have like an active link with models and information. It gets very challenging to have a very large geometric build environment inside of, for example, game engines like Unity or Unreal Engine, right? There are a lot of applications which are trying to target this problem. And for example, if we just think about Unity Reflect, right now they have a way to import models into Unity from Revit, and supposedly you don't have to optimize any geometry, it does it for you. Sometimes works fine, some other times when the model is too large and the geometry touches a certain amount of polysurface of polygons, it's still actually not working that great as you were expecting. So there is definitely a challenge of performance. And AI can definitely help in that direction. There are a lot of tools for geometry optimization that makes it very like faster when you're trying to optimizing like some geometry. For example, before I don't know if Alberto mentioned it already through his talk that like using tools like Grasshopper, which is very like familiar for architects and designer. There are a lot of plugins right now. They are building always more and more, and they are trying to target these problems. One is called Launchbox ML. Then there is All, and then the other name. Let me check some notes. What's the other one?
Dodo from Rentable.
Dodo, exactly. Yeah, there are some kind of plugins that you could use to really start to iterate very fast with geometry. Let's say that for my perspective, when we talk about augmented reality and virtual reality and gaming, I can say that probably machine vision and detection of inputs, so the motion of your hands, etc., is probably the most impactful use of artificial intelligence. Actually, AI allows this technology to work in this way. It wouldn't be possible. Because like we have the problem when we build experiences, virtual experiences, we have a problem that is the problem of performance, first of all. Like if you notice, like all of these emerging technologies as virtual reality and augmented reality doesn't look as good as much, for example, an animation that we are working on it or we are looking in television or anything like that, because we have to run in real time with a sort of interaction. Meanwhile, we are actually rendering. So there are a lot of things going on in the same moment. And thanks to some predictions, AI can actually cut those times and make it run more smoothly. There are a lot of applications in Unity that actually work in that way. Unity actually made like a set of tools called Mars that actually for enterprises and a lot of other companies are trying to imitate this kind of set of tools for the companies. And another example, which I would recall from what Alberto said about point clouds and geometry reconstruction. If we think about the new Apple, the new iPhone with the LiDAR technology, we can see how like reconstruction of environments is becoming more easy and becoming also more responsive, and you can actually build some environments on your own. We were not even close to that some years ago. And there are some technologies that are trying to use machine vision to overlap digital environments on physical environments in a very precise way. So the orientation of the, for example, if we are outside and we're looking at a certain location, In a larger discourse, we are using augmented reality to overlap digital information on physical information in a very accurate way. So if we think about more of a discourse that takes in consideration a cloud platform, which puts in communication everyone, the new technologies, for example, the last release from Apple allows you to have a higher level of precision, kind of looking at the image that you're looking for your camera, and matching that image with a sort of point cloud information that you have, like in your, like getting this point cloud information from the camera and kind of cross matching it with some information that are actually in the application itself and giving you the right orientation. This was something that like it's kind of putting together augmented reality with AI and machine vision, giving you more depth of information, giving you more precision.
Alessio, I can feel you talking about this quite huge challenge of dealing with this big amount of data. But at the same time, as you were just reporting us, AI does prove that there is a great potential in using this technology to just simplify our life in dealing with these big models for geometry visualization, for visualization of models itself, and many other user cases. What suggestion can you give to young people like me or many of our listeners who want to establish themselves in this field and maximize the benefits of being able to deal and manage this new data-driven currency, of being able to just simplify the daily life in front of our computers working with data or geometry?
Well, my suggestion from my point of view is pretty much getting comfortable in working in an environment which is never that stable as you could believe it is. It's really hard to, in my opinion, to find an education which would cover all of those topics in once. And there is a lot of depth in with the work that you can do. I myself come from a design background, and I've been experiencing a lot of these development skills that I'm applying right now on my own. I've been self-taught a lot of topics, and like every day I just look some blogs, and I understand that there is something new on the horizon coming. I suggest to don't be scared to start to understand these technologies from also third-party point of view. Like, for example, in my firm, we definitely don't have the time and the resources to start creating, for example, databases of you know, image recognition. That would be an investment of time and resources, and it's not that probably reliable as it could be done by other companies. So we took advantage a lot of, for example, other third-party service that, for example, was one of those was IBM for the Watson assistants, for doing that, for example, virtual assistants that can answer you in a very interactive way. But starting from those tools and then understanding if you want to go deeper and see if you want to do something more precise, if you want to build your own tools. There are a lot of resources online. Definitely YouTube, I can say it's one of my best way to learn on the go, like, because it's just faster. They give you the answer right away, and you just do your own research. You create all of your ecosystem, all of your environment of learning, and then you apply what you're actually interested in. I would suggest for who's looking into these technologies in the design environment to understand very well the concept of digital twin. That is an emerging concept. It's not that new, but it's been consolidated in the last years. This concept that they name it digital twin. I really like about talking about this topic because this topic includes a lot of things that are happening right now, and tries to group them into one technology only. The truth is that the discourse is much wider than that, right? Like,
we did experience that just preparing our podcast about digital twins some episodes ago with Julia, which she did a really good job in just diving into digital twin, using all of these resources online, many different blogs, support from Sylvia and many other people working on this podcast. And well, I guess looking online and trying to dive as deep as possible is the best way of doing it. And probably Alberto is agreeing on that, aren't you?
No, I totally agree with you, Daniel. And we see how this conversation about AI is basically going in so many different fields. And that's the power of AI, be in an interdisciplinary field where you basically touch all different others, cross-pollination of different ideas, different expertise. And touching base of the first part of Alessio, when he mentioned about digital twin, but also AR, VR, it's really important for architects to be able to reproduce and create and be engaged in this creation and design of synthetic environment. If you see also autonomous cars, autonomous driving cars, they are all based on synthetic environment. Main research try to reproduce a virtual environment with real Unity, but I want to mention also open source software like Blenders. Nowadays, having a platform like Blenders where you can use all the procedural capabilities of that and the community power that has been behind it. There is also Blender Beam. There are a lot of visual programming languages that you can apply with Blender as well, similar to Grasshopper, similar to Dynamo. And we see that also creating your own visual programming languages is not that hard. There are so many out there. It's getting really interesting to see how they can benefit also for AI. And AI is another example. There are several new upcoming visual programming languages that can simplify a lot the use of these technologies. So yeah, as you mentioned, a suggestion for you, Daniel, or young people who are entering the field is really try to be curious, try to be uncomfortable in the middle of them comfortable. So because all these fields are totally new and they're coming up every year, new research. So you need to be constantly in an uncomfortable field, which is a sort of position typical of a PhD, typical of a researcher. You're trying to explore a new field. You don't know what you're doing really well because you're experimenting. And especially deep learning is really an experimental field. Of course, you need to have a really good understanding of the math behind, a really good understanding of also programming languages, which should be already encapsulated in university as a main background. Should master Python for sure, C#, C++ as main languages, but also master statistics, probability, and the main foundation of math. And so if you are curious, if you not only reading online and blog, but really reading a lot of papers and publication from main conference like CVPR and ICCV and so many others, really important conference, in our case, it was Acadia, you can learn from there. But we as a community, together, industry, nonprofits, field, government, and also university, we should be better in reproducibility. So you should be able to reproduce the code in a way better way, or you should be allow people to play with your code. So you should release the code, make the code enjoyable for someone who's reading, not that hard to understand. You should document really well the code. This dry principle is really important. And the other part is really moving and following together this AI revolution on the main core ideas they have, like sharing, reproducibility, and so many others. And two examples are papers with code and connected papers, where you can see how much is important to produce really good and peer-reviewed papers that can have the approval, of course, from experts. At the same time, a code that can be used in an easy way, and I can basically try and go there and just try and, of course, it's going to take a while to set up the environment the first time, but then after a while, you can be comfortable just to try the code and see if it's working. So you can, it's more testing. You need to test all the technology with your hands. You can't trust any advertisement out there. There are a lot of fake information. So we should be grounded in more truthful information, so you can understand also the complexity of the field, what you need to use, like what kind of GPU, how many GPU. There are so many projects that you need to use 8 GPU just to train that model, and you can train also for 6 days. So understand the complexity of the field is really important. Of course, there are many shortcuts depending on the architecture you're using. You can use transfer learning with fine tuning to be able to reproduce quicker. But still, it's really important to put hands on, try, experiment, and be uncomfortable constantly. So that's the main suggestion to young me.
Alberto, thank you very much for giving us this insight and reminding us that it is not all about what we find in our first stage, just opening up Google as one of these massive engines, but also dive deeper into scientific reports and papers about the technology. I would like to swap over to a bit of a more practical piece of AI and dive deeper into the architecture language itself, which has, or obviously is developing using all of this new technology. And Alberto, you are also proving that using this technology is allowing us to open up new inputs for architectural languages. How do you implement these new inputs which drive the technology in your work, and how do you use it?
Yeah, we're talking about here a practical paradigm shift. So how all these technologies, exactly from computer vision, natural language processing, and generative design, so the way it can be applied in the way we're working right now, especially as you mentioned, in architectural design. And I think it comes with the main paradigm shift with the tools we are using. And I want to quote Lenin saying, make one step back to make two steps ahead. Now we are reaching a point where the current technologies is basically bringing us probably to the wrong path. And there is a group in a big company that's called Foresight Team. There are 10 people basically working on understanding what's going to be the future of AC in the next 10 years. And so that's where AI should play a really big role to shape our future in a more user-friendly, optimized way. And we can see how, as a new technology, imagine the iPad, even the iPad Pro, you now have the LiDAR incorporated, so you can make way better representation of the reality with simple scanning of the environment. And also with the Magic Pen pencil that you can use, and the Apple Pencil with the iPad or whatever tablet that you want to use, you can just sketch your idea, and also basically write, you can translate your writing to a normal typing. And so many capabilities of this technology are bringing to the table nowadays. And so we should review architecture with a more integrated way of sketching, and also AR and VR incorporated, where we can have a conversation and a dialogue with the computer, and the computer itself can give us recommendations, suggestion, prediction to better understand. And we see also a lot of spin-off, a lot of startups, especially in this hot topic and this field, are raising nowadays, like Alice Technologies, Hyper as well, Augment AI, that they are trying to solve this kind of problem, not essentially with AI, but try to change the paradigm shift connected with generative design, recommendation systems, scheduling, and so on. So this is one important field that we're going towards nowadays. Sure.
Yeah, and Alessio is using the same technology in a more practical way in shaping architectural forms and buildings. So can you please just give us an insight on how you use this artificial intelligence to shape the future of architecture? Or how do you think that this built environment will develop generally through the influence of artificial intelligence?
Sure. So I talk for my personal experience in the practice, and I'm sure that it's a very personal point of view because I work in a specific environment. I work at Morphosis Architects, that is a practice here in Los Angeles. And Morphosis is a well-known architecture firm in the environment of architecture in the field. And it's very well known for this kind of very formal approach to the buildings, where there are very complicated structure, and there are this very challenging project, like really like challenging physics and gravity. How the office is structured in a way is like there is a team of designers, there is a team of let's say that follows the construction process, so all of the Revit part of the model, and then there is another team which I'm part of that is a technical support team. So it's kind of taking all of the problems that go through the process and try to solve problems, or eventually also think about the parts of visualization as augmented reality and virtual reality as being advanced technologies. I have a very compelling episode to say regarding this. I remember that a professor from Florida Institute of Architecture, his name is Neil Leach. He came to Morphosis and he had like a conversation with Tom Main, that is the boss or the CEO of the company, about the use of AI today in architecture. The truth is that a lot of practices are not actually using AI for design. And I want to just like talk about this topic for a moment. Like everyone is thinking that AI is going to be replaced design. And that's a big topic in architecture right now, because it's say what like basically losing jobs and all of this, like what we are doing, how we are designing the new buildings, and how are we doing this. The truth is that like it's not all white or black. There are a lot of shades between these two topics. Like, for example, in my practice specifically, I don't think that AI would ever replace a design process. Like, I don't think that a designer would rely entirely on a tool online or a tool from a software to define a shape, because they believe in their own personal intent to give like a personality to the building. So I'm sure that this is going to be changing in the future. But what they are using AI for is like almost like to fill up the building. For example, with adaptive plans or performance studies for orientations of certain panels, and like trying to find a smart way to construct the very first idea. I would also like to mention the fact that like most of the shapes that my architecture firm work with are actually coming from a very early script in Grasshopper that the main lead designer of the office, that is called Daniel Kursky, did. And this script is not working, it's not powered by AI, but works in a very similar way. So it's a little bit the previous generation of AI that is not really AI, but it's like based on parameters, it gives you so many iterations that then you make your own decision. I think that if they would implement AI, they would use it probably in the same way. They would probably go through a lot of iterations geometrically that can be dictated by a database of shapes that they collected through the years. Like it's a 40 years old practice. So like they have a lot of material, a digital material to work with. And that kind of switch would require a lot of time in working and creating this database too. So it's also like an investment for the firm that I think that they are thinking about it, but like they should hire like certain people. They should make very big choices. And so I think for my practice specifically, the use of AI goes much more into something like clients oriented work. For example, I would like to bring up some of the last emerging technologies that came up recently. There is a new language generator method that is called GP3. I don't know if it's been ever part of the discourse in this podcast, but it's basically a communication AI method, which there are people that claim that it's going to be the real future of AI, of human AI, artificial intelligence, because it's so smart and it's so capable of creating conversation out of nothing like we could do. There are other people that say, actually, that's not like a progress for AI because it's not based on objective data. It's just based on collection of random sentences online. And I think a big part of my work related to AI, it's been actually creating this sort of virtual assistants inside of VR experiences. So trying to find a way to guide the client through an experience rather than being there with you, especially with this COVID period where remote experiences for experiencing space are more common. If you eventually find scalable way to produce experiences, so it doesn't require you to be there every time, but you can have like a virtual assistant that actually gives a lot of direction to the client and makes it easier for him to just make to see the space around. I think that was the main goal of our research that went through some of the last month. And definitely I see a lot of application for the client, like in terms of communication with the client and justify your choices through data. I'm not aware 100% of our research in terms of formal, in terms of creating shapes, creating 3D through AI. I know that there are a lot of tools that are growing now, PyTorch 3D and another thing that allows you to create stuff from photogrammetry. I have to say, from my perspective in the firm that I work, that there is a little bit of tension when it comes to the fact that AI can actually make formal decisions. Maybe Alberto can express some points of view on regard.
Yeah, right. No, this is a really challenging conversation. Definitely, we should work all together to define also more metrics regarding what is shape, the quality of the shape, the performance. I think AI can be really powerful nowadays, specifically to optimization, specific sustainability performance, structural performance, as you mentioned before, Alessio. So definitely, it depends in which kind of part of the design process we want to use AI. Definitely in the concept level, they're using generative design to produce, as you mentioned, different shapes. And then it's basically the human who's going to pick the best one. And probably this is one of the good example, one of the example actually of using AI. And I'm not sure if it's good or not, or if it's the way we should design in the future more. Then the same part is how we as human are encoded or are actually absorbing the information in the environment. When you type in the computer, it's different from when you sketch or when you basically draw. So that allow your brain to capture the information a different way. So be able to pick and to see all the different options without actually actively changing the environment with sketches, with lines, with text in a more profound way, a more deep way. But there are pros and cons, and probably that goes so far beyond the architectural field, it's more psychology, neuroscience, and of course, computer science as well. But that's an interesting field where a lot of research needs to be done. But the main part is we should do all this research together as an industry, and thinking about other companies like Apple, they are investing almost 7% of their annual budget to this kind of research. In that case, it's billion of dollars. But in the case of architecture, if we all together kind of put at least 2-3% of annual budget on research, on applied research, of course, research and development of something that can be used to the community. Also releasing data set. There are a lot of data sets regarding, you know, shapes. There is ShapeNet, ModelNet, also images, ImageNet, and so many others. Also for our environment, like Matterport, Replica, and Gibson are example of data set that are pretty used from the computer vision and deep learning industry, but are not used by architects. So it would be nice to have a data set where we can experiment, define a benchmark, start to playing around as a community, and embrace these kind of ideas and innovation that happening in the other field. So be able to share to each other this data, this environment, going to help benefit a lot industry, academia, and all of us as a community in the AEC. So that's the thing what I hope is going to happen in the next year, having more research, apply research in this field where we can all define the main metrics. You know, what is a good design in terms of not only performance, but also probably also qualitative results. And, you know, there are a lot of research done also already in the past with the golden ratio, with the proportion and so on. But the ancient Greek, we know really well. So, yeah, those can be reproduced by AI and be analyzed in a better way.
That it's nice, and both Alex, it's so nice to hear that you both do see the potential more in a way of using AI and all of the methodologies and the mediums behind it more as a helping tool to get our tasks done in a more efficient way rather than letting the technology reshape the world for us. So I'm very much welcoming this kind of idea and hope that you both are probably able to use AI much more in your upcoming years for your great work you're doing. And they would like to thank you both for giving us these deep insights into both practical and also scientific way of how you both approach this new technology. To close up with, I would invite you to give us, and especially to our listeners, links to websites or other research platforms. We have been touching some of them during the episode, but I would kindly ask you to both give us concluding some insights of medias where people could go and get well informed about deep learning in geometry. So let's start with Alessia and Christopher.
Yeah, so I think one of the person that I followed up in this kind of transition toward more an AI-driven technology methodology for design is Sebastian, sorry if I misspell it, Erasuris. On Instagram, his name is Sebastian Studio, so it's easier to find. He's like a designer technologist which really face all of these topics on a daily basis. It's more of a podcast streamer/he does also research. I think he's a very good influential designer in this scenario, because you really explain what are the possibilities. And there are a lot of articles by him that explain more or less what we've been talking about right now. And he really explained the tensions that there is in the field right now of design. There is a lot of problem in terms of ethics, right? Like in terms of if we let this technology become open source for a design firm, it's not exactly the same as another firm that could be doing just only tech, because you're giving away your design, and your design is also like your branding. So that's a very big topic, which probably would deserve a different podcast. Then I would like to stress the Spacemaker AI website, which you can understand really the potential. It's a little bit of a bundle of all of other tools that you can see that you can see for architecture and AI. I would like to also talk about the interaction and gesture for augmented reality wearables. So there is a workshop by Kurt Hollowell from Magic Leap called Mothership Workshop that is available on YouTube. And another tool which I really recommend to look at being a designer is Mapbox. Mapbox is for urban maps, urban environment, and they have a lot of SDK available for augmented reality and virtual reality. And it's basically your best link connection with the world in real time that you can have right now in terms of tooling.
Well, thank you. And I guess Albert is well used and well known to all of these references. I would like to share you also your personal reference.
Sure. Thank you, Daniel. It's a pleasure to share some of the research that currently I'm looking at. And specifically to your question, geometric and deep learning. Of course, we talk a lot about architecture and the different application of AI. So I'm not going to go too much on, you know, construction, also urban design, which is a really broad topic. And there are a lot of research done by S3 as well in, you know, transform and recognize satellite images, also work with GIS and so many other applications, but stay more focused and grounded on geometry and deep learning. There are a lot of really good material developed by Stanford Geometric Lab. And now they released this 3D GV colloquium, where you have all the top researcher, professor, that nowadays are integrated with big companies. So Leonidas Wibas is an example of one of the main director of Geometric Lab at Stanford. He's also the director of Facebook AI research. And that's a common trend nowadays. So I strongly recommend to see this kind of connection between academia and industry, how they're really shaping the future of our industry. And so that's an important colloquium. Also the Toronto Geometry Colloquium is another one where you can understand better the work done by in geometry. You can find a way to optimize different geometry. They see how it can optimize with curvature and the all different mesh optimization, especially if you work in architecture, in facade or building design. And there are a lot of work also done nowadays with tetrahedral meshes that's really useful for CFD analysis, for different analysis as well you want to do, since the object is not only a surface, but it's a volume basically where you can run a computational dynamic analysis. And many others reference, I can put some links for you in the description. Important to have also in the description for sure. The other one, it's more a suggestion to our young people, and I think you guys here are doing really an amazing job to share this information with the community. They develop sort of, I help as well, a community dojo. It's a community where you can be empowered to create your own community. You can be in a signer network. You can have tutor, mentor that can help you to build your network in the AEC, and you can follow the guideline on that. I also, with other people in Italy, we developed this deeplearningai.com. If you are Italian, of course, it's only Italian and English. And there are a lot of different courses on Coursera with deep learning AI for Andrew and G. I strongly recommend to look more into the university and big company that are the big player nowadays, where you can find really good material. So look at the main professor, NYU, Ian LeCan, and Alfredo Canziani, an Italian, they are doing an amazing job on that. in computer vision, another Italian is leading the research, Silvio Savarese, also especially in our field of architecture from construction, more construction computer vision. So yeah, definitely there is a lot of reference to that. So I'll make sure to give some links.
Yeah, so guys, due to the just countless amount of references, we will definitely provide a broader and quite in-deep list of all of the mentioned references and many more to be added in the description down below. Once again, Alessio and Alberto, both, thank you so much for joining into this episode. I would like to come back to you in one of the next episodes, possibly looking into deeper insights of AI and possibly also just share what is developing. It is so quickly shaping scene. And for now, I would just closing up, wishing you all the best, stay safe, and talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Another great interview. The first thing that we noticed, of course, is they talked about community. That's one of the great things, no matter which part of the AEC area that we're working on, there's always that great drive to have a great community. We talked about how AI is going to be helping VR and AR, and they use the example of the brand new iPhone and how it's got the LiDAR detection, which is super cool functionality. So it puts that functionality in everybody's hand. One of the things that I really liked was also we heard that AR is not going to take your job, that it's going to make your job easier. We heard that same thing in a previous episode with Brian Ringley talking about robotics, that we don't have to fear them taking away from us, but they're going to improve our workflows. And the last thing that I'll bring it to home on is what Alberto said about be curious and uncomfortable. That's how you're gonna grow. I thought that was a really great way to sort of end his segment. How about you, Daniel? What did you think of the interview?
I liked the way as well of both being quite passionate about what they are doing in a way of not just wanting to use all of the technologies to reinvent the future, but much more to improve tasks they are currently working on, but also, as you've just mentioned, to use AI to improve VR or AR realities, which do ask us to invest quite a lot of computing power, but also just to deal with a large amount of data. Well, at the second part, I've also had a nice time with Tim on a personal level, just being able to hear that they also do not see all of our work in data and that they also would highly appreciate to use all of the technology to help us getting stuff in a more efficient way and not so much spending time with not so amusing tasks like ordering lists or spending time converting geometry, which we all do far too much in my eyes.
Those are some great points. Automation is going to help us all. I really appreciate your insights on the interview, Daniel, and I certainly look forward to your next podcast topic.
The same for me. I'm most likely going to dive into environmental topics, which are more of my field of expertise. So let's look forward for the next episode with me in a couple of months.
Absolutely. So in closing, we would like to thank our podcast technology sponsor, BIMTRACK, for their continued support of the Built Academy, as well as Peter Yozel for the intro music he's provided to the podcast. Don't miss our next podcast airing December 30th, where you'll be hearing from all the Built Academy team, Julia, David, and Daniel returning for this very special episode. Please like, share, rate, and subscribe to our podcast and follow us on social media. And don't forget to connect with us via WhatsApp and have your say. Until then, on behalf of the Built Academy team, thank you for listening and stay curious.